It's Saturday night.
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder!
Saturday night's alright.
On Saturday night.
Okay, we are live. Welcome to Dynasty Saturday Night 5, episode 21. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you're listening on the Going for Two podcast feed. And also if you're watching us here on YouTube, either live now or later on, please make sure you subscribe to the channel. Do a little thumbs up, like on the video for us, and you know, maybe even turn on those notifications with the little bell. I'm Brian Ford, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh Walker. Josh, back from a hiatus, and how are you doing, Josh? How's life?
Life is great. The World Baseball Classic was amazing. Yeah, sorry to always fill this podcast with baseball propaganda at the start, but I love it. Happy it's here. And also, I've been just joining a couple of other startups in Dynasty, starting actually my first rookie draft coming up soon, before the draft. So things are actually starting to pick up after a little downtime.
Yeah, I have a couple of those Living Dangerously, you know, pre-NFL draft rookie drafts. So true or false, World Baseball Classic is bad for baseball?
False. Hard false. I think the Japan-USA game was probably the most watched baseball game ever, and I think it's fair and fitting that USA lost to Japan. I was rooting against them.
What about like things like the Edwin Diaz injury and things like that? You know, like that has like essentially it's an exhibition having a major effect on a multi-billion-dollar sport.
Yeah. That's kind of a fluke injury. He was celebrating. Yeah, no, he wouldn't have been celebrating like that in spring training. But Rhys Hoskins also just tore his ACL, just misfielding a ground ball. So I think it's going to happen if it's going
to
happen.
One thing I do like is there's a little bit more. I mean, I kind of don't really pay attention to baseball anymore. But there's a little bit more of the like let the kids play going on in the World Baseball Classic, you know, than there is in regular MLB. You know, a little more of that swagger, which I kind of like to a certain degree. For those of you who are wondering who is that lovely punim in the middle there, we're joined by our first ever guest on the show, and that's a fellow Going for Two podcaster, Ryan Searfoss. Ryan, how you doing?
Good, man. Didn't know I was the first guest. Now I feel like everyone's going to be disappointed. And to a punim, I'm not sure what's this term.
Punim, it's like a face. It's kind of like Yiddish for, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not well read, so
No. Yeah. I live in Northeast New Jersey, right? So okay. I'm in the New York metro area. There's a lot of Jewish people around here. I hear a lot of, Yiddish and things like that, like expressions and sure, yeah. So yeah, okay. Your punim is your face. Like
I wasn't familiar with that either.
Your facia. Uh oh. Gerson's here already with the Jalen Hyatt propaganda. You're gonna be pretty satisfied, Gerson. He's gonna be the first guy that we talk about. As we walk Ryan out on the plank with his Jalen Hyatt take. So just for folks who don't know, Ryan, where can they find you and your work, and what do you do?
You can find me on Twitter, Foss534. I podcast for Going for Two Wednesday nights of the Armchair Fantasy Show. Been there for 4 or 5 years now. We're first show on network. I think I was his first co-host on here, minus, I guess, Gersten in the DLF stuff, but I'm not degenerate enough to talk about that. Also, you can find me over at the Rookie Big Board. We have the Dynasty Big Board podcast. Also comes out Wednesdays, but in the morning. We put out a lot of good stuff there with Anthony Corriente and Eric Adams.
Right on. Yeah, and I am a proud patron of the Rookie Big Board as well. Yeah,
it's very well. It's worth joining. It's a lot of good stuff in there. A lot of smart people.
Absolutely. Yeah, so for those of you who forget, or it's your first time watching, for Dynasty Saturday Night 5, we like to use lists of five just as a vehicle to talk about a Dynasty topic, have a little fun on a Saturday night. None of us probably have a life, and so here we are. So tonight, we're going to be talking about our Superflex rookie rankings. And they are available at goingfor2.com. If you go to the rankings tab up top, it's one of the selections that you can choose. And the three people on the screen in front of you are the three people who do the Superflex rookie rankings for the website. So in today's episode, we're revisiting rookie rankings with Ryan as we take a look at where we're at now in the timeline, that we're a little bit past the combine and, you know, soaking up more and more information each week, each day, and also see where there's some variance and discrepancy among the rankings that I think are going to make for some good conversation. So we'll be looking at five rookie prospects for whom there is at least one outlier among the three of us as far as the rankings go. And we'll sort of, in a very polite way, tell Ryan why he's wrong. So
I love it. That's the way it should be.
Before we dive into that, Ryan, as our guest of honor, do you want to talk about maybe first your general thoughts on the 23 class and then your process for evaluating rookies? I think it's kind of cool now in the timeline to say that this year's class is a disappointment, so get the 24 picks. And so at this time in 2024, we're going to be saying that about the 25 class. But what are your thoughts, and how do you go about doing your evals?
So with this class in general, I think it's a very meat and potatoes class for fantasy football. So you're going to fill in a lot of needs, whether it's mainly depth, wide receiver twos, RB2s, RB3s. I think you're going to get a lot of pieces to build with the team or build around outside of maybe the top five or six guys. Because you do have that elite prospect in Bijan, a possibly very elite one, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is still not getting talked about enough. You know, he's amazing. But outside of that, you're going to have a lot of just guys who are good football players who are going to fill out rosters, fill in that secondary role, and still get enough volume to be relevant.
And as far as like how you go about breaking down your rankings and stuff like that and your process for evaluating rookies, what goes into it? I think the three of us kind of have each a different way that we go about it. And I think that's going to kind of be reflected in some of the rankings.
So my process, I start out, I don't want to hear anything about any prospect before I watch them. Unless like I've watched them, I just ignore all websites, ignore everything, everyone's opinions till I actually watch them. So I form my own. I'm trying not to be like, I don't want to say corrupted by it, but I don't want to be swung one way or another. It's harder later we get. After that, I do their film. Each category is worth 5. I have 15 categories. And that gets me my score out of 75. I then do essentially get 75%. Then I do 5% on their dominator breakout age combined, 5% on the combine. That'll do 10 on the, and 10 on where they get drafted. Okay. So that's how I get just my total grade out of 100 for them. Mm-hmm. But,
and would you say that what the listeners and viewers see on the Going for Two website, and your order of ranks, would you say that that's your ranking as far as who they are as just a straight up eval of the player as an NFL prospect, as a football player? How much does fantasy play a role in how you rank your players?
So it plays a good bit. When I first watch them on their pure film grade, it's going to be a lot of just what I like from a football player standpoint. So when I put like notes and stuff on like how they succeed, and I'll put like how they fit in offense, what their fantasy ceiling is, what their fantasy floor is. So once I get all my grades and stuff, I'll have like a final just kind of tweaking for it. So like, for example, someone we're not talking about tonight with Jordan Addison, who's considered one of the safe ones. I view his floor for fantasy as a wide receiver, is a low end wide receiver one, but I feel like his floor is high or is low end wide receiver two. So I feel like he's a very safe prospect and not a lot of variance. Or I might see somebody like Quentin Johnston, who his ceiling is top 7 receiver, but his floor is not playable. So that'll go into it as well. Mm-hmm. Once I get a little bit farther in the process still.
And we've talked a little bit about this before. Do you tend to lean into ceiling as a tiebreaker, floor as a tiebreaker, or does it depend on the person? For me, it depends on the person. I'm not very systematic about it. What about you?
So I've slowly tended to lean ceiling because I feel like in fantasy football, a lot of that low end wide receiver, running back, QB, whatever, tight end, 1, 2, 3 are very obtainable players. But the guys who blow up and are top five players at the position are much harder to obtain. So I'd rather swing for the fences and try to hit that. And then down the line, fill in the rest of my needs otherwise. And if we're like doing a draft, like a rookie draft, soon as round two's it, soon as we're in round two, it's we're swinging for the fences for me. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't care about a floor guy round three.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I'm a little different here and there. I think mine is very player dependent. Although there is a little bit of like where we are in the draft that goes into it. And as far as my rankings, what you're seeing on the website, it's very much fantasy related, but as we'll get to later on, it's also not exactly like the order I would take them in a fantasy draft, right? There's a blend there, because otherwise it would just be like, I'd just be spitting out ADP, right? You know, one guy that we're going to talk about later on is A-Chain, and where I have him ranked, right, is well below his ADP. I might take him at his ADP and trade him, right? So, you know, there's that too. Josh, how about you? What goes into your rankings?
Mine are almost solely fantasy based. That's why I had A-Chain as high as I did, which I'm moving down just a little bit. But it's all fantasy based. Basically, is a guide for me during my drafts. And yeah, team context does matter, but I also know what each of my team's drafting is. So mine are just basically in a vacuum. Like in a vacuum, who would I take in a row? And that's just how I do it. It's just easier for me that way. Real football doesn't translate to fantasy always. So I just try and, you know.
Mm-hmm. So if I looked at your rankings, it's more or less like how you might – it's more or less a draft board, so
yeah.
to speak.
Okay. Yeah, essentially.
All right,
yep.
Cool.
All it's right, just folks. Easier for me that way.
I hear you. Just real quick before we get into paying the bills, just want to shout out Toronto Dave. Toronto Dave is a very enthusiastic fantasy denizen, hops in on a lot of these – live shows, is very honest and vulnerable about his mental health stuff on Twitter, and we love Toronto Dave. So let's pay the bills before we get into arguing about Jalen Hyatt. Today's show is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, which, as you know, is the industry leader when it comes to things like best ball leagues, tournaments, pick'ems, private leagues, etc., etc. You'll see a lot of folks on Twitter are talking about, you know, they're drafting for this big board and the little board and all that. So, you know, head on down to Underdog Fantasy if you haven't already. They also have other major sports besides football. If you are a new account on Underdog, you can use our promo code GF2 and get a deposit match of up to $100. And so we're going to get a little fancy here. And this is where we show you the QR code for those of you viewing, where you can just scan that QR code. It'll take you right to Underdog and their website, where you can use our promo code GF2, put in that deposit of up to $100, and they'll match it. And you can start playing and maybe even hopefully start winning. Ryan, you play much best ball?
I've done, I don't know, like 8 or 10 drafts. Or, no, not that many, like 5 or 6. Best ball draft so far this year.
Do you think that gives you sort of an early window into what startup ADP is going to be, like to see how, where people are valuing players when they're skinning the game? Or is it just like you're scratching the itch because you're a degen and you don't want to like commit to a startup?
Yes to all. Like, yes, it gives me this. Yes. Like, come like June and I'm doing a draft, I'm on autopilot already. Because I know how I feel about everything. I've done so many drafts. A really cool thing about doing one this early is there's some huge advantages for fantasy. Especially like you're in tune with like the rookie draft. You get the people who just don't care about veterans at all in these. There's just so many advantages. I love doing best balls this early. Mm-hmm. And if you're watching the rest of the show tonight and you disagree with all my takes, invite me to a best ball and take my money. And if you love my takes, just do it for fun.
I've always found it hard to do best ball. I know this is kind of like best ball season, but for me, it's like, damn, am I really going to drop money on in March on what I think is going to be happening in November? Dude, like,
that's the hardest part. It's great, though, because I always forget about it come the end of the season. And I look at my best ball account. I'm like, oh, there's money here now.
You want to know why you do it? is because I've drafted five best ball leagues. I have 3 shares of Rashad Penny before the trade, and now I got him so late. So honestly, it's hit or miss. You know, you can obviously get someone and their situation changes, but if you take some shots late, you could really hit, and that can win you a lot of leagues.
And rookies are huge in this because you hit them breakout rookies late because they just slide.
Mm. Yep. Okay, you convinced me. I'm gonna go do an underdog draft later on this weekend. All right, time to argue politely about rookies. And the first one we're doing is Jalen Hyatt. So if you're playing along at home, Ryan has Jalen Hyatt ranked 7 overall. I have him at 28, and Josh has him at 23. Ryan, you seem to be the outlier here. Sell us on Jalen Hyatt.
So when you look at Jalen Hyatt, I mean, like a lot of guys in this draft, situation does matter because he is such a big deep threat receiver and explosive player. The thing is, the way he wins isn't just pure 4.32 speed or whatever. 4.4 is great, but he had a quicker 10-yard split than DeSean Jackson had back in the day. He has a 92 vertical, 97 broad jump percentiles for it all the time, which means he's explosive, and specifically it means he's explosive in small spaces. Because anytime you throw on Jalen Hyatt's tape, he is wide open on all these plays, putting up huge numbers in the SEC, the best conference in football, where we have guys going high in the NFL draft every time, and he's absolutely dominating, including 5 touchdown performance against Bama. He wins great vertically. He always creates space, separation. He's good after the catch. Only thing that you really didn't see much of was red flag wise would be not many contested catches and size concerns. But in a draft like this, size concerns are pretty common. So, and that's the way today's NFL is going, with it more spread out. His big playability makes his ceiling as high as anybody in this draft, minus JSN, all the receivers for me. Like, his ceiling could be just bananas.
Josh, what makes you low on Hyatt relative to DeBry?
It has nothing to do with athleticism and, like, upside, but it's all mainly about him maybe being a project as opposed to route running and maybe have a limited route tree. That's really all it is, and that's just me admittingly. I've said multiple times, I'm a sucker for route running and being able to gain separation on more than one route. And I felt like he was kind of limited to that. I don't know if it's system or what, but I did actually move him up after the combine, even though people bumped him down for running almost a 4.340.
The one thing I forgot to bring up with him was about his hands, because, again, that's one of the big concerns a lot of deep receivers is – there's a lot of drops and issues like that. Out of the top receivers, in the draft this year, his target or his catch rate on catchable balls is at 95%. So he catches everything. Only people ahead of him are JSN and Downs. Mm-hmm. And unlike them, he averaged 14.1 yards or air yards per target. So his A dot was just out of control and he was catching everything.
Yeah.
So he's winning downfield, and that separation, like, you may not see the route running, but he's manipulating his speed in the way to kind of create that, where you may not have to be as great of a route runner in sharp turns because he's doing it late in his route stems.
Yeah.
And I do have him as my wide receiver 7, so it's not like I'm, like, completely down on him. I'm pretty high up on him. I'll definitely take him early 2nd just to take a shot at upside.
So I guess I'm probably the low man then, not only in numerically, but I think in the vibes as well. I have him as my wide receiver 10, and I am pretty much out at cost on Jalen Hyatt. When I see Jalen Hyatt, I see someone who's getting schemed to get free release and can't really do it himself. He lacks physicality. I know a lot of rookie prospects, you know, don't do well with press coverage. He didn't see much of it, and when he did not look very good. You know, I think I saw somebody tweet the other day that he was essentially just running wheel routes out of the slot and just beating people with speed. I don't know if it's that simple, you know, and I think that person was kind of half joking. But there's more to it than that in the NFL. And I need him to be able to run his routes, use his body positioning better, deal with physical corners well. Also, I think, you know, the idea that he really only produced when Cedric Tillman was injured, I think he's the type of small who's going to need an alpha on the team to attract defense's attention. When he did line up on the outside, it was in like a wide receiver like stack, so that the one guy would be like the pick or the D, whatever, and like so that he would have the free release. He doesn't win when things are tight, even vertically. You know what I mean? My question about Jalin Hyatt is he Ted Ginn and Henry Ruggs? Right? And to me, the floor is so low, and the miss rate and the bust, or I shouldn't say miss rate, but the miss chance and the bust chance is so high. Like, and where he's going in drafts, like, there's no way that I'm going to have much Hyatt at all. And if I do, it'll be to trade to a believer. Like, if I'm stuck at 112 or 202 and I can't trade out of it and Hyatt's the best guy on the board, I'll take him, you know, but I'm going to trade him probably, right?
Question on a couple of comments with him. Mm-hmm. One about the team scheming for, mm-hmm. obviously scheming to create him be opening. And a lot of his production, he said, was when Tillman was out, which means he was essentially their only legit wide receiver, correct?
I mean, he was like the next guy. It was the next guy up, yeah.
So it's not like teams didn't realize what they were facing. And SEC football, which is arguably the best in college, they, in good coaching, scheme for him too.
Actually, they didn't do very well doing that. Like, if you saw, like, Alabama and other teams, like, didn't use their defense to, like, actually target him. Like, they knew it was happening, and they still, like, refused to, like, be aggressive on him, because they were so scared of his speed.
I mean, that's when you give up 6 for 207 and 5, which is absurd. And, like, that's where it is. I mean, he won either way. And even his bad games was – I think he had one game under 60 yards this season. Mm-hmm. Like, it was consistent production after week one.
Let me ask you this question about Hyatt. Your friend, Matt Hicks, didn't really do a player comp to Waddle, but said he could be a Waddle-type weapon as far as using the speed and the upside and the yak, right? When I think about Waddle and why I was in on Waddle relative to consensus, it was because I saw him do better running routes, and I saw him do better when people played him closer. I haven't seen that with Hyatt. So, I mean, to me, it's a very much not that I'm completely against projection, and I'm a production fetish guy, but you know, to me, it's kind of like you're really rolling the dice and taking a big swing on Hyatt if you have him, if you value him this high. That's all.
So he was actually one of the people we were kind of talking about, like the comps for him in production.
Yeah.
And it wasn't him, it was Anthony Corriente. We were talking about it when they brought up DeSean Jackson with somebody. They compared him to, because he didn't win underneath as much. It was a lot of post routes, post corners, deep routes. And the DeSean Jackson makes sense, and I feel like it's something that's kind of looked down on nowadays when you hear DeSean Jackson, because we remember this dude who's 35 now and unproductive. Mm-hmm. But he was winning in this way, downfield, putting up consecutive 11 to 1,300 yard seasons when he was in Philly. Another one who has a similar game, and you can use him that way, is Tyler Lockett. I don't think they're completely the same, but the way he's used, right system, he can be that kind of player.
Uh, Josh, any last words here on Jalin Hyatt before we pop over to our next guy?
No, I think you guys mostly covered it. I think the upside is there, and it's not like unheard of to develop route running as you go into the NFL and get better coaching. So I'm definitely early second. If Jalin Hyatt's there, I'm going to take him. But besides that.
Very high on route running too, by the way. It's just I think he does it in different – like you can win in different ways.
Okay. All right. The next guy we're going to talk about is – let's see my sheet here. Devon Achane, Kyle Senra checking in, saying hi, guys. Hi, Kyle. Always appreciate you popping in the chat. Jamie's here as well. Hey, Jamie, how you doing? Devon Achane, Josh, I think you're up because you have him, according to my rankings a couple hours ago, it was 16 overall. Ryan has him at 23, and I'm the low man again at 29. Sell me on Devon Achane.
Yeah. So right before the show, and honestly, as we were starting, I was a little unprepared this show, but I moved him down to 20, but that still doesn't negate that me and Ryan are higher on him than you, but I'll make my case. I mean, he obviously has elite speed. I don't want to say he's an elite receiver, but he's going to be a good receiver. And I think given that speed, I think teams will find a way to use him kind of as a gadget, kind of like they do Mecole Hardman, someone like that. And I think his contact balance is a little better than they're saying, but his size is very alarming. But I think his speed in the right system, they could find ways to work. But if he goes to a bad spot, I'm going to bump him down a lot. So draft capital matters a lot.
Okay. I am pretty much the low guy on Achane. I guess I'll go last. Ryan, thoughts on Achane?
Honestly, I feel like I have Achane too high. Like thinking about this.
I'm feeling that too. I'm feeling that too as things go on. As the season goes on, I feel that too.
Like, I think do the compliment. I think he has great speed, acceleration. I think he's a very creative runner and dangerous in open space. But I don't think in the NFL he has the speed to get the outside to create for that open space for himself. Like, I don't think he has a skill set to be even close to an every down back. Like, he's going to be somebody who's going to be a punt returner, kick returner. He's going to come up from gadget plays out of the slot and may play 18% of snaps. I just don't see where he has a role with that size. And anytime there's been any contact on him, he goes down. So they grab his jersey, he goes down. He literally breaks nothing. No tackles. It's just all what he creates with his speed and acceleration. Outside of that, man, that's why he's going to be a great returner. But fantasy-wise, I'm out.
You don't see him like a Nyheim Hines. And I'm bumping him back, thinking he would be like a third-down back, come in kind of like a J.D. McKissic, come in, like still have some fantasy relevance. Like taking him late second, early third, I'm happy with that.
But that's his ceiling.
Like, yeah, no, I agree.
And if I'm drafting the ceiling of that, I might take chances elsewhere. Like that ceiling is not that ceiling is a floor I'd rather have.
I think the ceiling's. I think given that he's a 4.3 runner, I think that teams can make it work. So I'm a little higher on him, I guess, than Ryan.
There's tons of small running backs who run 4.3s and disappeared. What was the dude the Steelers took a few years back, who was one like ran a 4.29? The running back.
We brought this up in our episode. And that was my one knock on him was his size, the comparisons, and all of them they fell out because they got hurt because they were probably undersized.
Like, that's just that undersized running back. Who cares about the speed? Because there it is. Thank you, Kyle. Dre Archer was lightning fast. And it just, NFL, he isn't built for that, man. You need size. Mm-hmm. It's a big man's thing.
Yeah. You know, I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate for Achane before I poop on him. So people have pointed out that for a guy his size, right? He isn't bad between the tackles and with functional play strength, right? The problem is, and this is where I'm going to start pooping on him, is when you get to the NFL, right? For your size, A, in college, B, doesn't, I think, translate well into the NFL. While he had a 99th percentile 40 and an 88th percentile speed score, which is not bad, right? I mean, you know, especially because you'd think, oh, he's under 190, he's under 5'9", so he's going to get dinged in the speed score, right? He ran so fast that his speed score was actually not too bad. It was the 88th percentile, right? But it only really translated because he didn't do many drills and only had a 31-inch vert, only translated into a 6.84 relative athletic score, right? And Ryan mentioned the fact that, like, the role is going to be limited. He's going to be on a pitch count. You know, I think the special teams kick returner stuff is going to be baked into his real-life DC, and I think it's going to inflate some folks' value of him in the fantasy football rookie drafts. You know, everything that Ryan said, I agree with. To me, A-Chain is the Hyatt of running backs. Like, they're going in the same range. They're small, and they have ceiling, and I want nothing to do with them. And I kind of think of them together a lot because of that. And I think I ranked them 28 and 29, so I think that's reflective of that. But one thing I do want to talk about with rankings that doesn't show up on the external of our website is that on the back end, when we do our rankings in the Fantasy Pros platform, it allows us to do tiers, right? So my tiers, especially after the first, 15 or so, they are kind of big, right? So if I pull up my rankings here and I look at my rookie rankings, my overall rookie rankings, I have a tier of, 20 to 29. So that's, that's 10 guys, right? That's a 10 guy tier that we're talking about. It's just that Hyatt and A-Chain are definitely solidly at the bottom of that tier. Whereas, for example, Marvin Mims and Kendre Miller are at the top of it. Josh, you were in a startup where you want to talk about where A-Chain went.
Yeah. So literally as we were speaking, he just went 11.02. But he went before A.J. Dillon, Mike Evans, Dalton Schultz, Brian Robinson, Zach Evans, Gabe Davis, and James Conner. So
the
hype is there.
The lesson that I have is when I'm on the clock at the 202, I'm trading that pick because there's somebody who likes A-Chain that much. And it's not me. It's not me.
No, and I just wanted to point that out because he was not even close to being on my radar, anywhere close to here. So there are people higher on him. On the show I was just on, my buddy Josiah and Nate, they were a lot higher on A-Chain than I was. So there are a lot of people out there. So if you do draft him, you might be able to trade him, kind of like Brian said earlier with Hyatt. If he's there, get him and trade him.
Our next guy is a tight end. And it's Dalton Kincaid, and I have him ranked 15th, and you all have him way down at 26. So I guess I'll make my case. So first off, I bake the tight end premium into the rankings, and I don't know if other folks do that on what we do with the website. And if you do that, that's cool. I'm just saying that, that's why I have him. So I have a three-man tight end tier of Mayer, Kincaid in Washington. So that's why he's going to be close to Mayer in my overall rankings as well. I have Mayer at 13, Kincaid at 15, and Washington at 18. They're in a tier of guys that are 10 to 19. And so, baking the tight end premium into it and the fact that he's in that tier of the first three tight ends together with those other two guys, somewhat explains why he is where he is. People are going to knock his size. And before I get to that, I'm going to just talk a little bit about what I do like about him before I sort of, turn into the case for the defense when it comes to his size and blocking. He is very athletic. We haven't seen the testing, but on film, it shows up. I'm going to want to see, I don't know if Utah does a pro day. I think he also had a back injury or something. So I don't know that he's doing it or anything like that. He's pretty good at route running. He's got good hands. He's got a good catch rate. Only two drops, I think, in 93 targets, in 2022, he is not the tight end that's being drafted to be a blocker, but also a receiver, right? He's being drafted to be that move tight end, that F tight end, whatever, that big slot, whatever folks are calling it now. That's what you're getting with Dalton Kincaid. And when somebody drafts him, like, you know, the Commanders at 16 or the Bengals at 28, what they're telling you is we're drafting him to be a part of our offense. Yes, you know, like blocking will be baked into Washington's draft capital, and they're telling you that too. But when you draft somebody like Kincaid, you're telling the world you're going to throw to him. He fits the mold for where tight end is moving in the NFL, and he's going to play that type of tight end. He's, you know, like Mike Gesicki, right? As far as like a pass catcher, a big slot that's not going to be asked to block at all. And so the and so people will say, okay, well, blocking gets you on the field, right? And therefore, you know, you want the guys who can block. Now, I will agree that to a certain extent, you know, you want a guy who can do both because you want a guy who's going to be on the field. And so I do have Mayer, you know, first, you know, in the tight ends, but not by much. What I care about with fantasy tight ends is their route participation. What percentage of dropbacks are they running routes on, right? I don't give up if you can block, right? Because a block is a snap and a dropback that you're not running a route on, and it really doesn't count for me. If Michael Mayer is getting on the field for more snaps or a higher snap percentage, but has a much lower route participation, like 70% versus 82%, right? That's why we love Greg Dulcich. Wasn't because blocking gets him on the field, because he was running like 85. He was running routes on 85% of Russell Wilson's dropbacks, and they were playing him in big slot half the time when the wide receivers were injured, right? The one thing that I think, and Josh, you can talk about it too, is that it gets you, I think, on the field in the red zone more, which is, I think, important, right? Because you can make the argument that, okay, you're on the 11-yard line and you have Mayer lined up as an inline tight end. The defense doesn't know if he's going to run block or run a route. But if they see Dalton Kincaid out there in big slot, they know what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
But Darren Waller got plenty of red zone targets, right? Got heavily targeted by Raiders quarterbacks, scored touchdowns, and his PFF blocking grade, run blocking grade, was never above a 58.2, right? Like, I don't care that Dalton Kincaid can't block. So, I don't know. Ryan, Josh, tell me why I'm wrong.
Josh, after you.
Okay. I commented on this about Twitter, and you kind of agreed on what I said. But I think, like, once you get in the red zone, you get within the 10-yard line especially. If you can't block, you're not going to be on the field. And there's a lot of like play action plays where they toss it off to the tight end. So I do think that it does overall affect your touchdown, like how many touchdowns you'll get, because it'll take away any chance of you to get any right there in the red zone where they just play action, dump it off to a tight end. But at the same time, I do think the NFL is shifting towards smaller tight ends, run them out in the slot like that, like with Brock Bowers coming out. But I would rather have Darnell Washington ahead of Kincaid, and that's only because I think he'll be on the field more. Mm-hmm. And even though it is shifting to a smaller tight end landscape, I think his size and his ability to play in open space and the fact that he's going to be blocking in the red zone and could easily slip out for touchdowns, I think he's going to have a lot higher touchdown equity than someone like Kincaid, who's going to rely more on yards after catch, which he's good at. I'm not saying he's not. He's right after Washington at three, but I still have Mayer first, Washington second, then Kincaid.
Yeah, so you're involved in a little dispute I had about blocking for tight ends on Twitter recently. And I feel like it's something that it was taken wrong both sides, because I feel like blocking for a tight end, while it is very important, the way the original thing was posted, that it didn't matter at all. I think it matters that you're a willing blocker and will try to do it to keep on the field. You don't have to be Darnell Washington, who might actually be too good of a blocker.
Yeah.
That keeps him on routes, which I have Kincaid over Washington. The reason I have Kincaid so low my overall is just because of my overall feeling on tight end as a position in fantasy. Mm.
Yeah.
I think you normally, in most cases, it's inconsistent and has a late breakout age in the NFL. Other than Kyle Pitts, who digressed, but that was just not his fault. But he was also a very elite talent. I think tight end a lot of times getting overdrafted in all rookie draft form, because unless they're elite right away, it's a 2 to 3 year window, and nobody who plays fantasy football has that patience, and they will be cut or is tossed in as a throw-in. I think I can get Dalton Kincaid, pennies on the dollar, this time next year, and he could break out after that. It's more about his value than the player himself.
I wanna say that Ryan brings up a very good point, and I think makes a good case for me dropping Kincaid in my ranking. So although he does have Michael Mayer at 9, so I don't know, right? Like,
I don't think I'd draft Mayer. I love Mayer. I think Mayer's I don't think Mayer's a superstar per se, but I think he has the floor and ceiling. I think he's an immediate starter because of that blocking. I think the blocking helps early on to get you on the field, where guys who don't block. So look how long we waited for that Evan Engram breakout, the David Njoku breakout, that Gerald Everett, who hasn't panned out yet, other than a few games. I think we've waited very long on them, but tight ends who've been able to block just a little bit have been able to get on the field earlier and break out. Like Kittle broke out super young. Freiermuth played very well super young, all good blockers. Yeah. I think it helps them early rather than late. Mm-hmm. And I think once teams have to get them involved in the offense and figure out ways to use them properly. So I think it just – it's a time period more than anything else for fantasy.
So shout out to Tom Tipple, friend of the show, Tom Tipple, made a YouTube short where he was citing some data that I want to get the exact thing right, but essentially every rookie tight end who was in the top 24 tight ends in startup ADP, like, lost value that year except for Kyle Pitts. So long story short, I think the idea that Ryan was saying that, like, this time next year, it's very likely, based on that trend, that Dalton Kincaid, who's going to be a top 24 tight end per startup ADP, his value will go down. So take Sam Laporta, take Luke Musgrave, take Tucker Kraft, take Zach Kuntz, right? As Kyle's saying in the chat, like, you know, don't spend anything more than a third on a tight end, because their value will actually probably go up based on that data. You add a little sprinkle, you get Kincaid on the way down, and you're good to go right when Kincaid's probably about to break out. Another thing that's against Kincaid, and again, I'm making the case against my guy, is with the slow breakout with tight ends, he's going to already be 24 in October. This is a pretty older tight end class when you look at their ages, and that's another thing to think about as well, as a case against Kincaid. So I think I'm going to drop some of my tight ends in the rankings based on this conversation. So well done. Well done. Josh, no, you were making some faces when I was talking.
No. It was just mainly that you're getting to where I am, where the only reason I'm lower on tight ends is just because I have other positions a little bit higher. Like, I have more wide receivers and running backs ahead of the tight ends outside of Mayer, which I see Kyle said something about not taking the tight ends in the third. I'll take Mayer late second. And I'm a Notre Dame homer, but outside of the late second, I'm not taking a tight end either. So I kind of agree with that.
I wish I had the stat in front of me. I was trying to find it on my Twitter when here it was out of the, like, tight ends taken in the first round. I think, I don't know if there's, and like the top, I'm sorry, like top 10, none have had back to back or multiple tight end one seasons.
I wonder, though, if – okay, so one hypothesis that I've been testing out is the idea that we need to care a little less about wide receiver size, because the smalls are
– it doesn't
– the smalls are doing better in the NFL, and that trend will continue, and the data will catch up, right?
Cough, Jalen Hyatt.
Let me play devil's advocate.
Hold on. So my hypothesis then with the tight ends then is this – type of volatility, this type of bleak landscape is going to maybe be smoothed out by these smaller move tight ends that are going to maybe buck that data. I don't know. Josh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, while we shouldn't pay too much attention to wide receiver height, JSN is fractionally taller than Ja'Marr Chase. That's all I'm going to say. Do with that what you will.
They're such different players.
Like, there's that, that no, doesn't take away that he's fractionally taller. That's all I'm saying. That's all. I'm
there's not. There's nothing similar. There's nothing similar about their games, but I love JSN. I will not say anything bad. He's unbelievable, and he's underrated right now somehow, and he's still top tight end off the board.
No, we agree.
But no, they're so different.
No, I know. I know. I just want to point that out.
Did somebody order a hooker? Well, you're going to get one. Tennessee Volunteer quarterback is somebody. This is one where there's kind of a widespread. You know, the last couple that we talked about, there was one outlier. This guy, we have him spread out pretty widely. Ryan comes in at number 34. I'm number 24. And Josh, you're going to kick us off because you have Hooker ranked 17th overall. Make the case for Hendon Hooker.
Yeah, so the main reason I did that was I wanted to put him one spot ahead of Will Levis. But aside from that,
Levis, I will make this happen.
But it also, like, I don't, like, the main knock on him is injury and age, but I don't care about age as much when it comes to quarterbacks. Like, as long as he doesn't get re-injured and keep injuring the same ACL, like, there are 39, 40-year-old quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think he's just way a much better quarterback than Will Levis is overall. He can run, he's mobile, he can move the pocket, and he's just much more accurate. He might not have, like, the quick release, but I think he has just as decent arm strength. Will Levis didn't really look that good when it came to the deep throws, so this pushed me down further. But I think he might need a year to rehab his knee a little bit, maybe take a little bit in. But I think in a 2 to 3 year span, I think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback and much better than Will Levis. And I wanted to get y'all's thoughts. I took him at 10-10 in this recent startup I did, after Brock Purdy and Matthew Stafford.
Well, I mean, if you're getting him after those two,
he's my third quarterback.
I don't think that, and he's your third quarterback. I don't think that's bad. I think 10-10 in general sounds a little high just in my head, but I think that context I think matters. Yeah. I guess
it's after Love and Garoppolo and Mac Jones.
Yeah. Jamie asking how much a broken hooker costs. Jamie, I can tell you offline.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Well,
Jamie, I'm married now.
I do budget shopping. Do you have Cash App, Jamie? If you have Cash App, we can talk. All right.
They take Cash App now? Wow. We're in the 25th century.
Yeah, now. Yeah. So I guess I'll go next because I'm kind of in the middle of y'all too on Hooker. So I think for me early on in the process, it was, this guy would probably be QB3 on people's boards if it wasn't for the age and the ACL and the combination thereof. Because by the time he hits the field sort of as his full self, he's almost 27. By the time his rookie contract is over, he's almost 29. It doesn't matter as much for quarterback as it does for other positions, particularly running back and wide receiver. But it doesn't not matter when you're an NFL team. But I think as far as like a stable leader who's smart, who has a floor, who could be Geno Smith, I like Hooker more than Levis. The reason that I have Levis five spots ahead of Hooker in my rankings is not because I like Levis. I mean, we all pretty much hate Levis on this podcast, right? For me, it's like there's a little bit of ceiling with Levis and a super flex that's important. And also the idea of draft capital that, you know, what the NFL has told us essentially is just like they're telling us we don't care about running back as much based on the way we draft them. They're kind of telling us if we don't draft a quarterback in the first round, we don't really care about them too much. And so it's that kind of draft capital difference of Levis maybe going between, I don't know, 7 and 19 overall, whereas Hooker might sneak into the late first if somebody – wants to take him there so they can do the fifth year option with him. There's that for me, that difference as well. But I agree. If he can find himself a good team that he can sit behind a starter for a year. You know, what if he went to the Rams? Have a lot of needs, but the Rams at 36, Seattle at 37, if they don't take QB1 Richardson in the first round. the Raiders, if they don't go with Levis or somebody at 7, there's an out in Jimmy G's contract. I don't know that the Saints have all that much figured out. I haven't looked at what the outs are with Carr's contract. Tennessee at 41 is really appealing to me because right now they have basically, you know, the sunset of Ryan Tannehill's career and then Malik freaking Willis. So I think, you know, him at 41 on Tennessee, then I'm interested, right? Then I'm saying, okay, the people spending the 205, the 207 on Hooker now in rookie draft mocks are not overdrafting him, because that, with the context of he'd be higher ranked if it weren't for the injury, and now you throw in like it's a really good landing spot, now I'm almost treating him as I would treat a legit first round quarterback like some of the ones that are going to go. Ryan, you're even 10 spots lower than I am. Why are you so low why don't you like Hookers?
Ryan hops in, can I say one more thing? I meant to add this in. I'm sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
The main reason I have him higher is because I think Hendon Hooker is much more pro-ready. He's already 6'4". He can move defenders with his eyes. He can manipulate defenders, and I think that's something Will Levis doesn't have, and that's a lot harder to teach.
Mm, yeah.
So I meant to add that in before. So.
Yeah, this is a safe space to hate Will Levis.
Josh, I didn't want to hate on him now.
We'll do a whole episode like 5 reasons to hate Will Levis, and we'll each come up with 5 reasons.
If you listen to Armchair last week, you know I feel like
I will claim I have dibs on the mayo in the coffee, because that just hits close to home for me. Ryan, tell us about Hooker.
So it's funny, my quarterback rating, he's my QB3.
Yeah.
I adore everything about him. I have a really hard time talking bad about him. I think he's accurate. I think he makes great decisions. He has less interception. He's the same amount of interceptions the last 3 years as Levis and Richardson has in their careers. Then they had last year each. He's accurate. He doesn't make bad decisions. He's athletic. He can run. He can make all the throws. It's the injury. He has a fracture. He had a fracture in his back. I want to say and it's going to be a long road to him starting. So I'm viewing this similar to how I talked about tight end before with Kincaid. I moved him down for the fact he's not going to start this year, and there's a good chance it might be a two-year wait. He might not start till midway year two. By that time, most fantasy owners are impatient and have moved on. And that's why I'm dropping him, because I don't think his value is either trade-worthy now, or I think I get somewhere I can get a better flip later and get him cheap at a different point. It's all his current and short-term value. I think his long-term value is good. I think the Geno Smith thing, when you said that, it clicked. I love that. And yeah, like you said, Seattle, like, wow, him in Seattle sitting behind Geno for 2 years would be perfect year three, step right in. Yeah. So I love that. And I think he's a very good football player. We have to be patient and fantasy owners in general don't have patience. That's why I moved him down, because I'm not going to reach.
Yeah, Geno was my main comp for him in an article about Hooker I did for the website. You bring up an important point about value and about windows, right? You know, because if you're going to – because he's going right now in the mid to late second in mocks.
I can't do that.
With people knowing that they're going to have to wait for him to hit, right? You know, and you might be better off taking, I don't know, Ty J Spears, my man, RB5, and take him at that spot, and then take, you know, whoever later, right? Maybe roll the dice on Jaren friggin' Hall or something. And then, you know, Hooker, it will still be attainable, you know, in the first year or two of the process. In fact, when people see him not playing at all, maybe even more attainable. So I think that's important consideration too, with Hooker. Yeah.
If you're taking him round two, I guarantee you next year, after he hadn't started and you don't know if he's going to start at the beginning of the year, somebody offers you a third round pick, you're going to do it. And then you'll end up regretting it later. It's like trading for a 2025 draft rookie pick right there.
Mm. Yeah, I feel you. I don't know how you can ban somebody from watching a show on YouTube, but we're going to have to ask Jeff how to block access for Kyle to the Going for Two YouTube channel.
You can't do that. Kyle's the Kyle's in every chat of every podcast ever. Kyle can never be.
And hosts like five shows. You cannot come on this show and slander Coffee by saying Coffee is gross in the chat. You simply cannot do it. You are not welcome.
He said mayo and Coffee.
All right.
But he's not. Look, he said, of course, I also think Coffee is gross. That is.
I was so held up on the mayo. I apologize.
What else are you going to drink with your, you know, fake Canadian bacon and maple syrup?
Kyle, I have one question for you. Do you play NASCAR DFS? To get you fully canceled.
Oh, yeah. No. I almost fired Ryan. I got a new. Not that I can do that, but I almost asked for a new co-host because he plays NASCAR DFS. It's crazy.
Goddamn right. Raise hell, praise Dale. I had to put it on there.
I love it. Hey, listen, you know, there's probably, you know, in football, it's hella popular and the market's getting sharper. There's probably money to be made in some of those less popular sports like NASCAR. So, like, you know, if you know what you're doing, you could probably clean up in that. Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. I know, but it's a good advantage.
And of course, Kyle only plays DFS for the CFL. You know what? One thing I was thinking today, I was listening to Matt Waldman talk about Zazavian Valade. A guy who I kind of like, you know, one of the deep sleeper, my guys. And he said he might be a better fit in when all is said and done for the CFL. And I was thinking, we now have theoretically four secondary football leagues to the NFL. We have the CFL, we have the XFL, we have the USFL, and, you know, arena, very different game, but we have that, right? I'm wondering what that does to, like, people's careers, but also the market for each of those. You know what I mean? Like there used to be like fewer leagues, and so they had more of a command over the supply of the players, right? Now, like, the CFL might be losing players to the XFL. The XFL might be losing players to the USFL. Like, I don't know. Like, how's that going to all shake out? Yeah.
It's just a D league for the NFL.
No, I was about to say the NFL is just going to come and eat up all the good players that they're.
Yeah, anybody who's good,
they pay them more than any other company is going to pay them.
Yeah, the league minimum is like triple what they pay.
And if it's anything like regular U.S. capitalism, they'll just simply buy all those leagues and get the government to waive some antitrust law and just do it that way.
Yep. Yeah, for free then.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fifth and final person we're going to talk about. As I called him in the headline for the article I wrote about him, a fallen Debbie darling, and that's Tank Bigsby. So I have Tank Bigsby ranked 12th, Josh right behind me at 13th, Ryan all the way down at 25. Yeah. So Ryan, do you want to start off with being the low guy? You want me to talk about why I like him? What do you want to do?
Talk about why you like him first. I just want to see if I can be swayed at all, because I might be low, but I have some feelings.
So I'm a fan of context matters with prospects. I think things are too binary for people. You know, X doesn't fit my model, or X looked like this on film. I think everything has context, right? And when you look at Tank Bigsby, he made the best of a bad situation in Auburn when it comes to coaching, scheming, offensive line, things like that. And I think that context matters. And he's making the best of a bad situation in the SEC, whereas Sean Tucker is making the best of a bad situation with the Syracuse offensive line in the ACC, right? Tank Bigsby is going to be a better NFL player than college player. And he's going to be a better fantasy football player than people think. Right now, there's a tier of running backs I have, running backs 4 through 7, which is Tank, Spears, Tucker, and Zach Evans, right? And to me, draft capital and landing spot are going to differentiate them a little bit. So until I get that information to differentiate them, they're kind of bunched together in my rankings at 12, 14, 16, and 17, right? So I have Tank at 12. To me, Tank is a safe, well-rounded back. He's not super great at almost anything, right? I think he's underrated at a few things. But I think he can be like a, I don't know, like a Josh Jacobs light, so to speak, right? I think people are underestimating some of the things that he does well. I think there is room to grow as a receiver. I think he's underrated as a receiver. Didn't run a lot of, you know, diverse routes, but when used was competent. You know, he has some flaws like any prospect does. You know, you don't like the fact that he kind of, you know, struggled, especially after, you know, a really promising freshman year. I think he sometimes will, instead of trying to make a defender miss, welcome contact too much. I think he will bounce runs outside too much sometimes. You know, these are flaws that running backs have. You know, he didn't do the 20 shuttle at the combine, which kind of, you know, was a little disappointing. And his RAS was only 7.81, and his you know, his broad was only 9.11. You know, et cetera, et cetera. I just think when it comes to, you know, I said before, there are sometimes when I'll lean into floor, and there's sometimes when I'll lean into ceiling. With Tank, I'm leaning into floor. I think he's a safe, well-rounded back, and that's why I like him more than the few guys beneath him, which I think have more uncertainty and more question marks. But below the guys above him, like Charb and Gibbs, who have, I think, who I'm leaning toward their ceiling. Something to think about with Tank is, I think, prospect fatigue as well, right? People who follow this stuff have soured on Tank, right? And I think he's getting like whatever the opposite of the benefit of the doubt is, right? Because of prospect fatigue. And I think that's kind of coming through in the way some people talk about him. And I think fantasy consumers are hearing that. And I think getting, I think, a prejudiced look at Tank. So there's my defense of Tank Bigsby.
Who you want?
I was about to say, I'm going to let Ryan hop in.
Okay. So with Tank Bigsby, he's a weird prospect for me. Like, just in general, I feel like nothing matches up with Tank Bigsby. Like, he has good size at the 210, but he doesn't play like that. So he's not good running outside of tackles. I'm sorry, he's not good running inside of tackles. He's not good at pushing the pal. Like, he very much struggles there. He has great vision. He's very good at finding cutback lanes. But you don't see that elite speed to go with it to get to the outside, which is how he went in college, is because he took good angles and went outside. In the NFL, that doesn't really that's something that doesn't translate. Like, average speed leads to average or below average production in the NFL, especially when you can't move the pile. Everyone knows you're on the field, you're running to the outside. So I think that's an issue. I think his catching ability was great. I didn't think he had great versatility as a receiver, which could have made up for a lot of the inside running, because if he was used in multiple ways and we could see him running some different routes, yes, that would be great, and that would change things a bit because he's not an inside runner. But he didn't do that, and that concerns me. It's not like it's not possible, but that makes his floor not match his ceiling, because that's a big part of it. So that's where I'm hesitant with him. He does a lot of things good, but he said not great, and that's how you end up being Wayne Gallman. Like, you're average, you're great running, a great backup, but you're never going to be the guy, and that's where my fears. He's not specifically good at anything to be a third down back or an early down back. He's like that third. He looks like that third guy in the rotation, or that only handcuffed back only. That's where my concerns are with him. I don't see a ceiling at all, okay. And the production never met. And he never had that elite production either, which also scares me.
Okay, I get what you're. I think I maybe look at him sort of in his physicality, probably, and between the tackles, a little better than you do. But I do I do acknowledge it. It's not great. I think a couple things, but I want to toss it to Josh, but just a couple things. Like, one thing to keep in mind too is expectations and what we're getting, what we're asking of these guys. When I have Tank ranked 12th among my rankings, right? And say he slips to like the late fourth and I bump him down a little bit, and say he's going at, I don't know, the 205, the 207 in rookie drafts in a little while, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting like a kind of mid, you know, kind of boring, kind of safe, kind of average, kind of running back two, but to me that's like solid and safe that I can lean on and rely on, you know. And I think that that's something to keep in mind. One thing that like stands
what's
out,
what's the highest you take him
right now?
Kidding. Yeah, so say we had a rookie draft today, how high do you take him? He's ranked 12th.
I mean,
are you going to reach for him?
Or? I took him 112 in a mock once, a couple weeks ago, probably right around where I'm taking Ty J Spears, 205, you know, right around there. Yeah. But what stands out to me, Ryan, is that actually I'll ask you this after I let Josh go. I'm sorry, Josh. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You hit on most of the points I was going to. So I'll just, this is honestly going to be brief because I just moved him down a few spots, but it was mainly because I moved Zach Evans up a little bit, which we can save for another episode. But the main reasons I like Tank Bigsby, I think he has good acceleration in the combine. He had really good 20 and 10-yard splits on his 40. Both were scored over 8. And honestly, I have his player comp to his absolute ceiling might be Nick Chubb. They didn't run too much separate 40s, so like 0.4 of a second. I think Nick Chubb's still more athletic. That's his absolute ceiling, and I think somewhere in the mid would be David Montgomery, a player like that.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
So I think landing spot does matter for Tank Bigsby, but I think he can – the way the NFL is turning into a committee, I think he could be a good one or two down back. And like Brian said, I think he has a really good floor for, like, you know what you're going to get with him. And landing spot is one of these ones where I can bump him down a few spots.
I think he can be like a this is not my original thought. I want to see who I'm quoting here. Hold on a second. I want to make sure I get it right. Actually, it was on our friends Hicks and Lab when they do the profiles on YouTube. Probably not a 250-plus carry guy, but a 250-plus touch guy. And I can hang with that. And I think that's kind of where you're at with him. But that he may yield, you know, passing work to a more specialized player. So what I was going to ask you, Ryan, is what stands out to me is you have a couple guys ahead of him who I think are pretty specialized and more niche and therefore to me, smaller chance of succeeding. And that's, A-Chain and McIntosh, and also Roshan above him, and I just don't so get that, but I could see how both of them are kind of meh. Yeah.
So that was, I'm not fully updated, I guess. I have A-Chain and McIntosh below him.
Okay.
Roshan, I think his bad combine was a myth. Like, I know his 40 wasn't great. I should bring this up. I wasn't. I know it was a myth, but he had a great 10-yard split.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good vertical. He had a good broad jump. He showed explosiveness. And to get that top speed, it takes a little bit for him to get going, but he's also a bigger back like that. That's why I have him. I have more faith in him. And he actually showed more chops to receiver, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah,
but the other two I moved below him since then. And that's my oopser. Yeah. But yeah. So he's probably moved up a little bit since then for me.
I like Roshan. I think I don't want to turn this into a Roshan episode, but
Well, I do have a question for Ryan if we have a little bit of time. So would it change your like trajectory for Tank Bigsby if he ended up being like a Mark Ingram type player? Mark Ingram tested absolutely horribly at the combine, but someone who's just always staying in the NFL, would that boost your value on him or kind of keep him where he's at? Like, if you know he's going to always be relevant in some case.
So his combine isn't what hurt him for me. to be honest. His so I had his film grades of 55 out of 75, which was below a lot of other decent running backs before that even happened. In the combine, he got a mid-round grade for it with off his RAS score. So he was in that sixth range. The specialized backs, they have a nice floor put in. Even guys like, weirdly, like somebody like Chris Rodriguez, who's not exciting at all, but I know he's going to get a ton of red zone carries in the NFL. I can see how he's getting his fantasy points. It's a little bit more of a struggle for somebody like Tank Spigsby for me to see how they're going to get me enough fantasy points or that specific role in the NFL. Like, they have that tweener role for me, and tweeners are not good.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy to bring up, Rodriguez, because he was on our list of potential guys to talk about. You have him at 27. I have him at 43, and Ryan has him at 46. I think that, you know, I think he's much more limited than Tank is. I think Tank has a wider range of ways to succeed. So I guess I see him maybe the opposite. And I also know that, I shouldn't say no, but like reading the tea leaves, looking at projections, it looks like, you know, Rodriguez is going to be like a 6th round pick. Whereas I think if Tank slides, we're looking at a 4th round pick. And I think, you know, to a certain degree, I'm not saying draft capital is like, you know, the thing that you
flips them for me,
but it matters, you know, it matters, you know, and I think that's kind of baked into my rankings too, which I don't know that you do. Cause I think it's more so than a straight player eval is I'm putting expected DC and fantasy translation and all that as my inputs, you know, when I think about where to rank guys. Yeah.
So I don't have like perceived draft capital. Mm-hmm. I put that 10% for me. Mm-hmm. I put that, which is, ends up being huge at the end, but I put that in at the end once they're drafted. I don't project where they are. Cause in all reality, so many mock drafts are crazy and they're far off. I mean, look at Malik Willis was projected top 15 last year and how much he fell. So that's, I don't put it until it happens, but that if, even if he's a round higher, that flips off Sam. It moves him up 3 to 4 places.
So is Tank. Go ahead.
No. What were you gonna say?
Is Tank busy? Bigsby basically gonna be Damian Pierce.
Dude, if he's Damian Pierce, I was pretty high on Damian Pierce for the thought of it.
I mean, Tank tested way better at the combine, but I'm just saying, if he gets drafted in the 4th round, is he gonna be somebody that like might flash for a little bit, then people slowly sour on because
Damian
realize
Pierce is good.
The draft capital is not good, so.
Damian Pierce was very good, though, when he played this year. And he was very good and productive at Florida. Mm. So, it's hard. Like, I like the prospect more. I think Pierce is going to have more starting power than we expect.
Yeah, I guess, not as big a fan of him as some other people are. But, speaking of Damian Pierce, something I forgot to say at the top of the show is you can be the next – the person who designs our next show logo. If you DM me on Twitter at FFJunkie_, a 16:9, a 16:9 ratio, whatever JPEG of a player that you'd like to see with the words Dynasty Saturday Night 5 in some form. We're gonna judge the entries and declare a winner. Deadline is May 1st. Damian Pierce is our current logo. So that kind of reminded me of that. Please make sure that you DM me that JPEG and we'll see if you get to win. So just before we land the plane, just want to ask a little bit about, like, you know, did we change any minds? Did we rethink anything? Is there anything kind of left unsaid that you wanted to touch on? Josh, I'll start with you.
Sorry, I had double audio cut. And repeat that one more time.
Yeah,
my internet just went out for a second.
Did we change your mind about any rankings, or is there anything like kind of that you want to just that was left unsaid that you want to say before we close out?
I think it just really honed in that draft capital matters. I'm obviously going to take in everything you both said and weigh that in with draft capital, but for now, my rankings are pretty much just going to kind of stay where they are. You know, I did on post combine, but I'm definitely going to keep things in mind. I might move Hyatt up a little bit depending on where he goes, because I do really like him. He was one of my favorite receivers coming out of before like all this process happened, but that's probably it. Just I might move Hyatt up some.
I will probably slide my tight ends down a little bit after this conversation. I'm going to try to be open-minded about Hyatt and A-Chain. And I think Tank too. I think I have Tank at 4 and Roshan at 9, and they're in two different tiers. And I don't know that there's that kind of a gap between them as I think there is. So I think I want to look into that a little bit more. Ryan, guest of honor, did we tell you how, or did we make you realize how criminally high and overrated you have Jalin Hyatt? Or
I am now officially moving Hyatt from wide receiver 3 to wide receiver 2. But
I love it.
I'm going to give Tank. I need to give Tank a second watch. Is what I came to. Everyone I've watched I've watched one time. A few guys who like the testing seemed off. I've watched a second time, but I need to give Tank a second play because I am lower than him on most. And you guys did bring up some good points with his versatility and that. So I need to go back there and watch him again because his film grade would put him in like RB8 for me instead of 10. So I think I need to give him a second watch because he was probably my fourth or fifth running back watched.
Quick question from Jamie here. Who's going to be this year's Pacheco, the late round guy with upside? Ryan, who do you think?
I mean, that was very weird.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I really like Chase Brown from Illinois. I think there's a lot to like there. I don't think he's very talked about. I think he's super quick and shifty. He runs really hard. So I think he's a very good player. I don't know if he's a Pacheco like that like skill set. I actually compared him to James Robinson, who's what Pacheco was the year before, I guess, where he was kind of forgotten. No one saw him. But I really like him as somebody's going to go late, and he's just outside of my top 5.
I can never answer questions like this with just one guy. So if we're thinking about like really late, like Pacheco was in the 7th round, Zavian Valade, Keaton Mitchell, Tyon Evans, Tavion Thomas, right? These are all guys who, in the right situation and asked to do what's good for their skill set, you know, like in particular, the NFL is moving more towards gap running now, right? So if, you know, if you're asking like a guy who's good at gap to do gap running, right, then, you know, and only do that, and he's in a committee where he doesn't have to do X, Y, and Z, right, which is kind of what Pacheco was because there was other running backs to do other things. Sure. Yeah, there's always guys like that, but it's so hard to predict who they are. And Toronto Dave saying great show. Love the different perspectives. Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Kyle asking, does Evan Hull count as a late round guy? We'll see. I don't know. He's creeping up. I think I see him as like a 4th, 5th rounder at the moment. I don't know if that's like late. He kind of feels a little bit like a trap to me.
But Evan Hull is Kyle's RB like 3 or 4 or something, I remember.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
I love you, Kyle.
Yeah, see, I wasn't going to go as late as Joe. I think it's so either much. Izzy or Eric Gray.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are my two.
Yeah, those are good ones. Yeah, for sure. Because Izzy's an interesting study with Roshan. I was saying before the show how I have them ranked pretty closely. And it's like they're both kind of have room to grow in the position. Right. But Izzy's doing it as a 20-year-old. Right. And Roshan's doing it as a 22-year-old. So something to keep in mind as well. I think the NFL likes Roshan better than they like Izzy. So we're going to see him.
Tomatoes, tomatoes. What's a few years in Dynasty?
Well, 2 years of running back is a lifetime.
No, I know.
That is a freaking decade of your life.
I can.
Yeah.
You're hitting your midlife crisis in 2 years.
Sometimes I reflect on that, how like, you know, I'm 45 and I'm saying, you know, the window for these, you know, 21-year-olds who ran a 40 in about half the time that I could run an 80, you know,
God,
like,
so old.
Like, you know, like another one I'm saying in like half the time that I could run the 40, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, oh, and there's only this 2-year window. Like, man, perspective.
No, I love calling people like 3 times faster than me slow.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
4.62. Come on, McIntosh, what are you doing? Meanwhile, I'm out here like with my shattered ankle running a 9.69. You know, like, come on. All right, time to land the plane. Let's see. Going for two, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on the audio podcast feed. Also, if you're watching us here on YouTube, please make sure that you turn on the notifications, subscribe, etc. Like the video with a little thumbs up. Leave us a comment. That would be great. Going for two has a wide variety of content for you, a show just about every night of the week, as well as a fun Discord. You can go to goingfor2.com where we have all sorts of things for you for fantasy. And go to the bottom right. There's a little purple Discord widget. Hop in the free Discord and have some fun with us. There's lots of different channels. There's always stuff going on. There's always Thomas yelling about running backs and all sorts of fun stuff. Remember the logo design contest. DM me on Twitter for more details, where to send the JPEG and all that. Time for plugs. Ryan, tell us about where folks can find you and your work.
GoingFor2.com. Armchair Fantasy Show Wednesday nights. Boss534 on Twitter. Rookie Big Board. Our Discord's really cool too, as well as the Going for 2-1. So join all of them, man. Come hear me talk nonsense about football.
All right. And Josh, plugs, plugs, plugs.
Yeah, you can find me on the Twitter streets at Rotonaut, Rotonaut. Mainly spewing Braves propaganda, all that stuff, hating on Mets and Phillies and New York and Philadelphia fans as we go.
What sport is this?
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about it. Don't even talk about this. I already have
tickets
I hate it already, man.
Yeah, it'll also go for 2.com.
I hate it so much. I go to baseball games to be miserable. Because my team
To watch my team win and be really good. So
I go to watch my team lose and bench strike. So awesome.
The more I got into football and especially dynasty and doing content, and it's just like I don't have time in my brain for baseball anymore. You can find me on Twitter at @ffjunkie_. You can find articles and rankings at goingfor2.com. I've been spitting out some prospect profiles lately. We're kind of rounding out that series. Going to be doing it, I think, an interesting like multi-part article about dynasty running backs after the NFL draft. You can find me on another podcast, Dynasty Fever, Wednesday. Episodes drop Thursday, audio only, at Dynasty Fever Pod. And I guess that's about it. Ryan, thanks so much for spending some time with us and being the first ever guest on.
It feels great being the first guest somewhere. I've never had that before. It's awesome.
All right, folks. That's a wrap. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Josh.
Go ahead.